graphic nature of this program, listener discretion is advised.
Hello, you're listening to Two Strangers, One Podcast.
Shredder, get away from the computer. I need it.
I'm trying to do a promo, Krang.
Oh, do that later.
Oh, fine.
It's just a coincidence that you were talking about the Jack and Tryon show and I'm here. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, the guy who makes all those unlistenable podcasts over at Smodcast.com, and you're listening to the Two Strangers, One Podcast. This is podcasting.
You're listening to Two Strangers, One Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes or on the Stitcher app for Android devices. Please visit TwoStrangersOnePodcast.net. Now, here's Chris Colon and Paul Pasquillo.
Well, hello and welcome to Two Strangers, One Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I am still not Paul.
Once again, introduce yourself, sir.
I'm Sketch, the editor and host of the Toonami Faithful Podcast. The other thing that Paul does and occasionally brings up on this podcast.
And I feel so bad because having you co-host this episode, okay, you know, it feels like I'm cheating on him. But to make matters worse, to go see this movie, I actually went to Paul's theater. I actually went to, you know, because I needed to catch 11:30.
Scandalous.
Yeah. I was so hoping to run into him at the box office. You know, he doesn't usually work the box office. Or like, you know, sometimes I'll see him behind the counter, like, not that he works in concessions either. He's sort of like a manager. But usually, he's around somewhere in the lobby area whenever I go to his job. And so I went and I was like, nope, he's not here. Then I go past the concession stand. Nope, he's not here. Not that I was going to buy any concessions. Nope, he wasn't there, unfortunately. Not today, not this morning, not at the 11:30 show. And with this being the first weekend, I couldn't have pulled the friend card and go, hey, man, you know, let me in for free. And at the 11:30 show in the morning, now, of course, I guess we should talk about it. We're going to follow up on it's weird. This is sort of a part two to an episode much, much earlier from 2014.
The
late great Turtle Debate, which it feels weird to say that episode was 2 years ago. Jesus Christ, how long have we been doing this podcast?
So long. Yeah, actually, Toonami Faithful Podcast just celebrated our 200th episode.
It feels weird to think that, you know, it doesn't feel like 2 years ago, but I guess.
No, it really doesn't.
And even then, cause we recorded that it was months after the movie came out. I think it was just, we finally got you on the show.
Yeah.
But, like I said, just literally about 5 hours ago, I went to go see Ninja Turtle. So it's still fresh in my mind. I went, didn't see Paul. You know, had to go take care of some errands.
Good if you saw Paul, because be like, hey, Paul, I'm going to see this Ninja Turtles movie. Then I'm going to talk about it on the podcast with Sketch. And be like, you son of a bitch.
And that's, you know what it is? Like, you know, Paul is probably the only person that I know in Rochester that will probably like come with me to go see Ninja Turtles. But since he works in the theater, like all the movies I want to see, all the genre movies I want to see.
I should see it with his kid anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But I guess, you know, so I'm there. Like I said, usually I could have played the friendship card and asked, you know, for him to get me in for free, but I was there at 11:30. I was the only person in the theater. And, you know, for a Tuesday morning, you know, matinee, which somehow matinee ended up me being $11.25, but that was for the 3D viewing. I do like feeling like a king when you're sitting in the middle of the movie theater by yourself, like, la la la, I could do all the things I want, you know. I can text and I can jump up and down and I can throw things at the screen. Not that I do anything like that, but so I guess we'll stay spoiler free in the beginning, even though I don't know, there isn't much to spoil in this movie. I guess
the trailers spoil pretty much everything.
Yeah. And at least we finally got a chance. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the new additions to the movie, Bebop, Rocksteady, Krang, you know, all the people from the original series. And, you know, we went into this way before the episode, but, you know, I never got into any other reiteration of the Ninja Turtles. I only watched the original cartoons, you know, and a couple series, you know, the seasons that followed. I never got into the 2004. I never got into the 2012. So, you know, I don't know, you know, all these other storylines and arcs and things that have allegedly happened in these series. I guess not allegedly, did happen. So, having Krang, Bebop, Rocksteady, Casey Jones, that's right in my wheelhouse. That's, you know, as okay, you know, it's not like they're bringing in, you know, here's, you know, some new third, you know, some other character that I've, you know, not at least I'm still
relevant. Venus de Milo, the female Ninja Turtle.
Oh, that's right. That had breasts under her.
Her that was so wrong. Oh, and, nah.
And then that would make it sort of like a Smurfette situation, you know, like,
oh, totally.
You know, she's like the only one, so who gets, you know, who gets dibs on the one solo female? And could they have kids? Because how did, what was her, I forgot her origin story, but she was
Chinese, actually. She was Chinese. She referred to herself as a shinobi, which, by the way, is a ninja. She's like, I use shinobi magic. It's like, shinobi or ninja? She's like, don't call me a ninja. It's like, oh, okay. So ninja's a bad word now. Okay. I see how it is.
Wait, Chinese isn't, aren't ninjas Japanese in nature?
Japanese, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so shinobi isn't even a Chinese word, as far as I know. But she like grew up in China, or maybe it was just Chinatown. I feel like it was just Chinatown. And like her father figure was like an old Chinese man who taught her magic and stuff and was one of Splinter's friends. And then he, like, faces off against this evil dragon demon, and, you know, he gets captured or trapped or something. I don't remember all the details. But she ends up in the care of Master Splinter and the turtles, and is like, hey, you know, there was a fifth turtle in the bowl you didn't know about. It was a girl, because reasons.
There's toy sales, that's why. And I just, but I mean, so I guess technically they could have kids.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Now, would she have eggs or would she actually get?
I think it would be eggs.
It would be eggs? Yeah. Yeah, because they're more turtle than human.
Yeah, they're more turtle than human.
So, okay, with the movie, here we go. I guess, I mean, I don't, it, to, without getting into spoilers, I mean, I guess we kind of have to spoil how, you know, the one of the baddies is sort of introduced without going in. I guess, I mean, it's not really a spoiler, I guess, to say that.
The trailers show that Krang is in the movie, so therefore Krang is not a spoiler. Oh, though the way that he is introduced, I suppose, would be a spoiler.
Yeah, that'll be spoiler. But, I mean, I'm talking about, well, not one of the baddies, I guess not the big baddie, but, you know, so Shredder. You know, here we go. We get him locked up in part one. Now, magically, he's being sentenced. He's going upstate. Now, of course, now you have to understand, my New York City detector goes off whenever I see these movies, because I love, like, you know, like the first Ninja Turtles when they're sliding down like a mountain, and then like as soon as they fall off their mountain, they're like in Manhattan, and I'm like, there are no giant snowy mountains near the island of Manhattan. But so in this one, you know, he's in custody, and of course he's in custody of the city, you know, which or what would be the county corrections. And he's going upstate. I mean, he's obviously a murderer 36 times over. So I guess he's going to be going to a state facility, because they're saying he's going upstate. Because if you were in a city, preferably Rikers Island, you would only be in, you know, that's, I guess, you know, and I guess in the movie's timeline, because they took about a year ago, because once again, it doesn't feel like a year ago, because when they introduce Vern's character, you know, in this movie, they sort of say that, you know, Vern sort of takes the all the credit for the Ninja Turtles taking, you know, for the Ninja Turtles saving the city, since Vern was there. Will Arnett's character, oh my God, how could I forget his last name? Vern
Fenwick.
He earns the nickname the Falcon. And of course, you know, Will Arnett playing a good character that loves, you know, people loving him, even though he doesn't have anything to really show for it, goes right up his alley, where it's, you know, people think he's the hero that saved the city, but he isn't, you know. So I lost my train of thought. So they're transporting the Shredder, I'm assuming, from city custody to state custody, and also being a corrections officer, because once again, not really a spoiler, Casey Jones is a correction officer in this movie, this is one of the big giant like slights, like, uh-oh, what's going on here, what are they changing now? So in this one, they make Casey Jones a corrections officer, and he's part of the convoy to get the Shredder transported from, I'm assuming, once again, I'm just totally assuming, from the city to the state. And of course, my New York detector goes up because they're like, oh, we're on 87, which technically means, and if you look at the way the highway is shaped, it looks like the FDR Drive, and the convoy gets attacked by the Foot Clan. And of course, in all of my mind, I'm like, they haven't hit one single pothole yet. You know, like... There's no way there'd be no traffic on the FDR Drive. I don't care if they have police escort. There, you know, even at 9 o'clock at night, there's traffic on the FDR Drive going up to the Major Deegan. So yeah, I guess, you know, without getting into spoilers, the Foot Clan succeeds in popping Sensei Shredder out, and then we find out behind the scenes.
They don't exactly succeed.
Well, I think they were trying to. He was on his way. He was on his way before he was intercepted, which I guess we'll save that for the spoilers. But then, you know, we get introduced to Jesus Christ. Why I just saw this movie. How could I forget?
Bebop and Rocksteady. Well, and Rocksteady are the two guys that are
inexplicably
with Shredder, who's getting sent upstate.
Yeah, they're for no reason whatsoever. And now, mind you, Bebop and Rocksteady, I mean, here we go. They explain Shredder. Okay, he's a murderer, 36 counts of murder. I guess, you know, they're going back to part one with all the damage he did to New York City that, you know, I guess turned out to him being murdering 36 people, including the William Fichtner character. Bebop and Rocksteady are on the same convoy. They never explain what crimes they've committed. They're just sort of like really roundabout thugs, you know, guys that just sort of like, you know, just guys are like starting shit. They never explain why they're in the same, you know, why if you have the most dangerous person, you know, if we had caught, you know, the, I don't know, what would be the equivalent, like, you know, maybe not an Osama bin Laden, but some of that caliber, why would he be transported with anybody else in the truck? So the Foot Clan do their best to help Master Shredder escape. And let me see, what else happens after that?
About Baxter Stockman.
That's the word I was looking for.
Baxter Stockman is introduced as a scientist, world-renowned scientist, who April thinks is aiding Shredder. Don't really explain why she thinks that, but she's like, I'm going to try to get information off his portable device to make sure that he's really working with the Shredder, because I think he's working with Shredder. And, well, yeah, of course, that's right. So she tries to get some information from him, and Baxter is one kind of... Baxter and Karai are sort of trying to work together to get Sensei Shredder out of police custody because, you know, they don't want him to be up in the clink anymore.
Yeah, well, now, okay, so we have
Baxter... And their last-ditch effort is to use a transportation whatever that Baxter came upon, some kind of probably alien technology that he just found.
Mm. Now, so they have, obviously, Tyler Perry is playing Baxter Stockman in this movie. Now, obviously, Tyler Perry is he's an old nerd. I mean, he was in the newer Star Trek movies. You know, I think he's outed himself as a guy, you know, who likes science fiction and stuff like that. So, you know, I think he was more than happy to do this movie. I mean, he has his own empire to deal with. But, you know, it is funny because, you know, Tyler Perry is like 6'2 or something like that. I mean, he's a giant dude. And he's playing Baxter Stockman, which, once again, in my experience, Baxter Stockman is always, you know, pencil neck geek kind of guy.
Yeah, they may have artificially made him look shorter.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
I didn't really think about it either, but given how tall he actually is, I think they may have done some creative camera work there.
Yeah, okay.
Not like Tom Cruise.
But, the opposite of Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. He was always like sitting down or you know, because I think he was definitely sitting
like
down.
Like hunched anytime. Over. It's like, oh, Sensei Shredder.
Yeah, anytime he was talking to Shredder, I think he was sitting down. Now that I think about it, you know.
He was standing a lot of the time, but I think he was like not standing up straight because, you know. Yeah, shy demeanor, and they wants to respect his sensei.
Oh, gotcha.
Why does he call him Sensei Shredder? I didn't.
Yeah, right. Is Baxter Stockman some sort
master
of
Master Shredder? I would get, but Sensei Shredder seems like what is Baxter Stockman a weeb in this? Maybe.
And why is he like? Why is he working for Shredder? They never really.
No, they don't explain that at all.
You know, because they keep. I mean, like twice or three times they mention, oh, here's Baxter Stockman. He graduated MIT at 15, and you know, and he's you know, brilliant nanotechnology, you know, scientist. Why does he need Shredder for? I'm pretty sure, you know, why would...
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, kind of like how in the first movie, Eric Sachs, you know, super wealthy guy, smart, doesn't really need Shredder's help, but inexplicably... Shredder, you know.
And, you know,
Shredder has
so much charisma.
Oh, yeah, he had lots of charisma in that movie and this movie as well. So much charisma.
Shredder definitely knows how to pick his partners. So with Baxter Stockman, and then I guess, okay, so we got the turf.
Now, as a reminder, there was somebody credited as Baxter Stockman in the first movie. And I think there's like one black scientist among all the scientists that were in that one scene where the turtles were getting their mutagen drained out of them. Oh. So, yeah, I guess maybe it would have gone back that far, but they really don't. They don't explain anything, but whatever.
Now,
plot holes, whatever.
I'm just curious, if a part three gets made, are we going to see a Tyler Perry turn into a giant fly man? That's because think about it. I mean, you know, I know he's a busy guy. He has to be. So, I mean, they would only need him for, like, you know, the first couple scenes in the beginning. And then he could just do all, you know, booth work and just, you know, be the voice. And you know, they could make a terrifying, you know, Brundle fly character or something like that.
Oh, gosh. It's just Jeff Goldblum's The Fly up in this. That would give Krang a run for its money for disturbing factor.
And so, then we do get introduced to Krang. I guess, I don't know, it's not really a spoil. I mean, I guess we won't spoil how, but Krang introduces his plan to Shredder, and now we finally see them together. Where, you know, I kind of, once again, thinking about the old cartoon, I kind of wish they played off each other a little more instead
Me
of just,
too.
Like, I'm evil. You're evil. So, too. Like, we're both evil. You know, I wish it had a little more like jokes or and not that Shredder was ever kind of Shredder never really made jokes.
Shredder had a stick up his butt. I mean, the other, like, the cartoon Shredder, he took himself very seriously, at least at first. Mm-hmm. But eventually Shredder and Krang acted like an old married couple.
Yeah.
It's like, when you're Shredder, it's your turn to take out the garbage. It's not my turn to take out the garbage, Krang. It's Bebop and Rocksteady's. Oh, boss, it's always our turn. That's right, because I'm the boss. I will see who the boss is.
Oh, shut up, you bucket of brains. Or brain bucket.
Yeah, so Brad Garrett does an interesting voice for Krang. It's kind of like a really deep version of the cartoon Krang voice.
Mm-hmm. But without the croaking.
Like, yeah, without the croaking, because who can do the croaking but Fat Fraley? Like the Transformers movies, I sure would have liked it if they had actually gotten Pat Fraley, mm-hmm. But oh well.
Yeah, I think of all the voices, I mean, you know, that's what, you know, if they didn't even get, why is my brain not working? You know, the voice of Megatron, the original voice of Megatron.
Yeah, yeah.
If they didn't get him to be Megatron, you know, and then they brought him in, like, in part two to be, like, Soundwave or something like that, like, it just, you know.
He was also Soundwave, so that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hugo Weaving was just wasted as Megatron. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, we just need an evil voice or whatever, and it's... You know, once again,
Mr. Anderson.
Were people going to that movie? I mean, not that we're going to veer off into Transformers, which there is a...
Yeah, nobody went to that movie to hear Hugo Weaving as Megatron.
Yeah, but, you know, once what I do like is there is a Transformers Easter egg, or not, I guess Easter egg is something a little more hidden. This is a little more obvious, showing that these universes are, at least it's a nod, a wink and a nod to the Transformers.
They did do the at the parade, the Halloween parade, Michelangelo meets a guy who's got a really neat Transformers costume and does like the and stands up like he's a robot, and then he pounds Michelangelo's hand and then and off he goes.
Yeah, and I've seen people do that on the internet. They do have, like, people that can that do that are
set up
like robots and then get down and kind of hunch over and
That's some pretty advanced cosplay.
And they can roll and stuff like that. Now the one thing, once again, one of my New York radar bullshit detector goes up, because this parade, you know, and let me tell you, I love the New York City Halloween parade. This is something that I can honestly say probably from, you know, well into my like later 20s. I would say from my teens to my 20s, I don't think I missed a year for a good 10 to 15 years. This one looked oddly like a Day of the Dead in Mexico parade.
It did.
I guess they were kind of, I don't know if they were trying. I mean, obviously you can't have too many licensed characters or whatever, but you know, it's New York, you know, they had so many people with like skull painted faces, and that was not necessary. Not that, you know, I have anything against skull painted faces or that kind of culture thing, but
I actually got a Mardi Gras vibe out of it.
Yeah. I mean, either, I mean, and let me tell you, you know, from someone that's been to, you know, like I said, at least 10 to 15 New York City parades, I mean, they should have had more. Like, you know, and then, you know, once again, here's a perfect time. And of course, yes, okay, they had the Bumblebee character. They could have introduced, you know, they could have had a million Easter eggs in that scene of characters from Hasbro or you know, whatever, you know, I guess these are all Hasbro characters. Were they Ninja Turtles or the toys from?
No, Ninja Turtles were Playmates.
Oh, okay.
And Playmates kind of only ever did Ninja Turtles as far as like boys action brands go. Mm-hmm. They did a few things here and there. I think they did the Toxic Crusaders, which was practically Ninja Turtles. Even though Toxic Avenger was, I'm pretty sure Toxic Avenger maybe didn't predate the Ninja Turtles comic. I don't know. I'm going to stop because I don't know. And I don't like to say things, but I don't know.
We're guys nerdier than us. No, the exact. So, once again, a teeny tiny argument was that
you could have had like it parent because Paramount is the like the overseeing company, so you could have had SpongeBob, you could have had Star Trek, you could have had Transformers as they did, you know, pretty much anything Viacom owned feasibly could have been in there, and Viacom owns a lot of things, including everything on Nickelodeon.
Obviously New York City being New York City, you see a lot more, and the most PC way I guess is a lot more fabulous floats, I guess would be the best way to put it, you know, and there wasn't that much of that. This looked more like a Day of the Dead. And I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, people wearing, you know, 30-foot FOA, you know, feathered boas and feathered things, you know, shooting 30 feet up in the air and stuff like that. Like not even exaggerating, or you have to be careful when you pass by under a red light or something like that. You know, that to me, that's the New York City Halloween parade. But once again, small argument, you know, I guess.
Okay. On that question of New York authenticity, mm-hmm. Could you get to the Knicks stadium from the sewer?
Well, I mean, I guess technically, I mean, there's got to be a lot of toilets in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, you.
But is it in any way
underground? Because it seemed like they went underground to get there, which is odd.
No. I mean, no. The Madison Square Garden is well above ground, but I think they kind of. No, because remember, they jumped out of the sewers, grabbed the pizza. And that's once again, New York City bullshit detector comes out. Where the guy was standing for his pizza doesn't look anywhere near Madison Square Garden. You know, unless maybe it was a couple blocks away.
Several blocks away. This was part of their workout.
Yeah, and they jumped a few blocks over rooftops and then made it to Madison Square Garden. Which then again, really one pizza for 8 foot tall turtles? They're going to eat one fucking pizza? You know,
now,
and you see the guy checking his phone. So, I guess it was paid for with credit card or something.
Yeah. It was paid for with credit card. They got the turtle credit card, like the bat credit card.
So they snatched the turtle. And I did like, you know, they show the Knicks playing and I'm glad it was like the Knicks and it wasn't like, you know, the New York, the New York Knights or some shit like that. I mean, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was an actual Knicks game.
And then later on in the movie, for no reason whatsoever, they have Carmelo Anthony in the movie. He has a cameo in the movie for no fucking reason whatsoever, other than someone who created the movie, you know, was probably a fan of his and decided to have him. Because he talks to Vern's character, which, I don't know, is Carmelo? Let me Google that real quick, because I'm really... And it's one of those deals where, like, I know people who grew up with him and stuff like that, and I know he's like half African American, half Puerto Rican, but you know, is he Carmelo? He's he. Okay. I'm sorry. He is a Knick. He is in the New York Knicks right now. So, you know, they're at a Knicks game. They're in Madison Square Garden. And then, you know, magically later on in the movie, Carmelo Anthony has a speaking part for no explanation other than, like I said, someone's probably a fan of his who created the movie. Okay, so the Turtles, they've got Baxter Stockman. You know, Krang tells him he needs the parts of this transportation device, which, you know, once again, they never really explain why he's...
We're veering into spoiler territory now.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. And we are, I guess we are kind of like halfway through where this episode would be. So I guess before we get into spoilers, what I guess we want
to... general thoughts here. This movie has lots of turtles. It is all about the turtles. The turtles are the stars. That was my biggest beef with the first one, and I am glad that that has changed for the better. The other thing is, even though people often said the first movie was for children, I had a problem with that because I felt like it was overly violent for a children's movie, and this movie definitely dials that back. So the point, even though it's PG-13, about the only thing inappropriate for children in this movie is a few swear words, which the
nowadays
1990s kids. Movie was definitely guilty of. Got myself kicked out of kindergarten one day for uttering Raphael's favorite word from the 90s movie. Do you know what that word means, young man?
No.
I don't.
I know what he curses. He doesn't he curse real loud in a scene?
Is yeah. That, what is, he says it like three times.
What does he say?
He says damn.
Oh.
Like, damn.
Because I know there's one scene where he's like, he yells it like crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's facing off with Casey Jones. Casey Jones gets away and Raphael's running after him. Come back here. I'm not finished with you. Damn.
Now,
what was that? Looked like sort of a big turtle in a trench coat. I love that movie. And that was playing on Sci-Fi the other day. I was like, this movie takes me to my happy place. Oh, it's so campy.
And let me tell you, okay, and what now? Kind of, I'll give my thoughts on it. I really like this movie for what it was, for what it's based on, for outrageous as it's supposed to be. I enjoyed it. This is a full-on summer popcorn film, and in you know, with you know, when I say popcorn film, in no way am I trying to be insulting. This is a movie that it was fun, it was exciting, entertaining. You know, I do have a special place in my heart for Ninja Turtles, but I think you can come into this movie sort of, you know, even if you've never seen the cartoons and you're not, you know. I think it's, you know, and it's sad that it had such a disappointing opening weekend because according to Variety, it says that they only made like $35 million this weekend when the movie itself cost $135, you know, really smashing any fucking chance of there being a sequel. But, you know, I can hope because I actually like the way I liked it was paced well. I think I don't think it dragged out for a movie that's 2 hours long. Cause once again, you know, I was trying to schedule my morning and I usually don't care how long a movie is.
No, pacing was good.
You know, and I watched it, you know, and I was like, it's an hour and 53 minutes. And it was good. I have to say, I really enjoyed it. You know, before we get into the spoilers, but, you know, I guess one of the arguments I actually heard someone say is, oh, it's too much like the cartoon. And I'm like, well, that's how it's supposed to be like the cartoon, or at least the original, you know, 80s or 90s cartoon, you know, the original.
Yeah, the 80s cartoon. This is a big budget, half CGI remake of the early Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon from the 1987. Like, it establishes how Shredder meets Krang. You could even argue that that may have been how Shredder met Krang. They never really, I don't think they ever explained that in that cartoon. I mean, there's like 200 episodes, so kind of hard to pin down exactly what episode that might have gotten brought up, but it definitely wasn't established in the first five where you are introduced to Krang and Shredder's dynamic. So it's it's all about the same we're going to take over the world nonsense from the 1980s cartoon, and you know, it's like a long episode of a Saturday morning cartoon. And in a lot of ways, that is perfectly good. In other ways, it doesn't make for great cinema because it's a stale storyline that we've seen plenty of times in better movies, like Avengers. So yeah.
I was so waiting for, you know, that's almost like a joke now, the big blue beam that shoots up in the sky from the ground. And there's something kind of like that. Once again, it's under spoilers.
Yeah,
but,
kinda.
But not. But I mean, you know, but it does follow, you know, it definitely follows structure. It definitely follows, you know, they're not breaking any ground.
Definitely not breaking any ground with this movie. But at the same time, I feel like it makes up for all of the, I wouldn't go so far as to say, how do I put this? This is actually not regarding the 2014 movie. I'm talking about the old movies. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like an apology letter for all the people that wanted certain things in the second live action Ninja Turtles movie. This you finally got Bebop and Rocksteady. Finally get Krang. You finally get other elements from that cartoon. The kinds of things that people really wanted to see in the second Ninja Turtles movie, which you did not get.
Yeah.
And you did not get until this point. So in that way, it's kind of an apology letter for that movie, which is fun and kind of bad, but entertaining to an extent. But this movie's probably better than that one. In at least a lot of ways. It maybe doesn't have as much heart, but as far as fairly simple, safe for kids, action adventure movie with a basic plot. It's not bad at all. It's very serviceable. It's a decent movie. Just don't go in expecting like Captain America Civil War.
Yes.
it's not that. It was never intended to be that. I wish that there was a Ninja Turtles movie that was that good, but until they even top the 1990 movie, sorry, that's just not going to happen. And if you can't do Ninja Turtles well, if you do it dark like they did in 2014, then do it well campy. That's all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, you mentioned Civil War because quite frankly, of all the movies that I've seen recently, you know, okay, besides Civil War and maybe The Force Awakens, this was the most fun I had in a theater. The movie felt fun to me. And that's, you know, that to me, fun is a lot of points. I can get away. You can get away with a lot of nonsense, like a giant brain in a in a robot.
It was fun. It was very fun. And unlike the Transformers movies, it wasn't insulting your intelligence.
Yeah,
like the Transformers movies are offensive. This movie, all right, there's a fart joke. Big deal.
Okay. Yeah.
Other than that, it's silly.
Yeah, but by the characters who should have done a fart joke.
Yeah. Exactly. It's by the characters that should have done a fart joke because that is entirely in line with their characters. It's Bebop and Rocksteady. Listen.
Yeah.
Bebop. Who was it? Rocksteady. Rocksteady farts in Bebop. Oh, no. Maybe it was the other one. Ah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's
Bebop. By the way, Gary Anthony Williams as Bebop is so great. Mm. I love it.
I dug Seamus. I liked both the
what
the
problem casting. With Seamus's voice is rock steady is it was just kind of plain. Mm-hmm. Like it, particularly when that one scene where he's like, whoa, that was my bad. I was like, that doesn't sound like Rocksteady to me. But yeah, I did like how they played off each other. They were really good.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry was very good as Baxter Stockman. I felt like he was a little too over the top silly, but
he was camping it up a bit.
Yeah, he was definitely camping it up a bit. This is gonna be good. And he was just classic mad scientist. Soon the world will know the name Baxter Stockman. There will be but footnotes.
And there was, and I'm totally stealing this from the Weekly Planet podcast. They had said this would be, that would have, okay, so, and it's not really a spoiler, whatever, where Splinter goes, you know, oh, you won't be anything. I keep saying Splinter, I should say Shredder. Shredder said, you know, you're not going to be anything. What they said, he should have said, you're not even a fly.
He totally should have said that.
Had he said something like that, that would have been, you know, beautiful little.
But I do like the pun that you'll be a footnote.
Yeah.
Because it's the Foot Clan. Oh, yeah. By the way, these, they're ninjas this time. The Foot Clan are ninjas this time.
And have that,
they're not very good ninjas.
Well,
it's sad who they lose to in some capacities. And Karai is a joke in this movie. Like, she wasn't much of a character in the first one, but she was like the field ops person. And in this movie, she's just sidelined. It's sad. Which is weird, because they recast her. Why even bother if you're going to...
They said she had a sword. She didn't have a sword. She had like...
close enough.
It was like a glorified dagger.
But none of the foot ninjas had guns.
You stole the words right out of my mouth. I was the one thing I was so pleased in this movie that was a giant argument that I had from the first movie is that...
Bulletproof turtles here.
It was, you know, everybody, they either had swords... they all had swords, but you know, they that was it. You know, no Uzis or whatever they had in the first movie.
Yeah, none of that nonsense. I mean, they had like things that could explode.
Mm. Oh yeah,
but they didn't have like military weapons.
So yeah, I'm so glad that they. I don't know if they took note or whatever from the internet, because
they definitely took notes from the internet, because it's a lighter movie, it's a funner movie. There's more turtles. There's less April. There's more iconic characters, and it's more kid-appropriate. And I feel like those are all things that at least a lot of people brought up about the previous movie. And they kind of push aside all of the remaining plot threads from that first movie just to introduce a bunch of new stuff, which is, I don't know. But it, a lot of people feel like it was sort of a reboot, even though a lot of the things were carried over. It was still sort of a reboot because, like, the ninjas instead of military people, Shredder was more of a human and less of a robot. And I guess that's the main thing. Oh, and the turtles are slimmed down. They still look a little ugly as sin, but they're a bit better. And Splinter also looks nicer. They did better animation for him.
Yeah, less phallic.
Yeah.
Less like a cock and balls. And then, less clutter on their shells. Less.
I think there was about as much, but it's not as noticeable because they're slimmer. Except for Raphael, he's still about as bulky because he's the muscle. Which, by the way, if you didn't know their roles, they explain it right in the opening.
Which I don't mind, because there was a joke in there. So I don't mind that they do the whole, you know, the brains, the muscle, the leader. So
remember when I was talking about how you didn't spend enough time with the turtles, that you never really, the emotional attachment wasn't there when they had those moments? It was all there this time.
Oh yeah.
You spent enough time with the turtles. There is an inner conflict there about the turtles wanting to come out of the shadows. Ha ha, clever title. And now some of them have differing opinions on whether or not they should, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So there's that, and there's a good family dynamic here. It's kind of a stale one, because in a lot of Ninja Turtle stuff, it's like, oh, Leonardo can't get the other ones to fall in line with him, and he's struggling as a leader, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That's it's a pretty common Ninja Turtle story. And the main threat is also a really common Ninja Turtle story, so it's a bit stale. But at least some of that has never been done in film before. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But I feel like the real downer here is Casey. It's not any Casey that is like in the 80s cartoon. He was a whack job. he totally unhinged and kind of mellowed down at a point. And by the way, one of the greatest memorable episodes of Ninja Turtles was when Casey Jones went to was called Corporate Raiders from Dimension X, and he goes to this business where Krang and Shredder are like brainwashing people, and he like becomes an upstanding member of society. That show was silly. But this Casey Jones is a pretty boy. You know, he's played by Stephen Amell. You don't get to see him in the mask very often. He doesn't have.
Why would you put the face?
Yeah, exactly. And the kind of weird thing is, he sort of fills the role that Megan Fox's April did in the previous movie, and how it's A young adult professional wants to prove themselves, has a dream. In this case, he wants to be a detective. That came out of nowhere. Oh, and along with a really common trope in films and television, there's the police chief that's all like, Jones! Yeah, so there's that.
All right, so I
it's a better movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but if I had to compare it to other Ninja Turtles movies, it might actually be second to the 1990 movie. But the hinge there is I still want to give it to TMNT 2007 for second, because that has the great Leonardo versus Raphael fight, and that's really the only reason you see that movie. Otherwise, the plot's pretty meh.
And that was a computer-generated one, right? That was the totally CGI
animated one. And it might tie that one, because overall it's more of a... well, for one thing, it deals with all the iconic characters, and that movie decidedly did not. I mean, the Foot Clan's in there, and Karai is in there, but it's all like, Shredder isn't here, and we're going to leave hints that Shredder will be back. Like, oh, that never got a sequel, so whatever. But I am bummed that Shredder, even though he is a character this time, and it's kind of amusing to see him be like the one serious character among all these idiots. Well, Baxter's not an idiot per se, but he's a goofball.
Yeah.
So it's like the cartoon in that regard, because Shredder is always like trying to take everything seriously, and he has all of these morons working for him. And much like the cartoon, he's using morons to work for him, when it's like, oh, come on, man. You're a capable martial artist. Why don't you get some of this stuff done yourself? So in that regard, props to the first movie for actually having Shredder fight, even though he was like a robot.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that kills me. I just, actually, I'm veering into spoiler territory. Mm-hmm. So Shredder's kind of underutilized in this movie. I mean, he's there for a lot of it, but I feel like he's underutilized, and that's a shame. Because Brian T. seems all right for Shredder. Whatever. So, it's a silly movie. As long as you take the approach that this is not serious at all, you'll probably have a good time.
Total popcorn. I hate when people talk about like Fast and the Furious and, oh, you turn off your brain and watch it. I mean, that sounds insulting to say turn off your brain, but I totally mean it when I say popcorn movie, you know, as in, you know what, it's a warm
afternoon. I had popcorn when I watched it.
Yeah, you know, you want to get out of the sun and you want to get into a nice air conditioned movie theater. And, you know, I mean, I do feel that.
Decent time killer.
Yeah. You know, it's loyal to the cartoon, but I think you could come into this movie as a newbie. You know, I think, you know, you don't have
maybe
to.
I feel like people who aren't would be really lost. But if you, there's a lot of action movies that don't give you a lot of explanation for various things. So if you come to it with that approach, yeah, sure, you could certainly enjoy it. I mean, the turtles are entertaining, regardless. And I guess I would say Casey is pretty entertaining, even though I feel like he's more fast-talking than he probably should be. Mm-hmm. Megan Fox is actually maybe worse is April in this movie. It seems like she was doing some better acting in the previous one, probably because she had a lot more screen time. But in this movie, after a point, it seems like she's just there to pose.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at least in the first movie, they kind of like, they wrote it, not that they wrote it off, they explained it away where it's sort of like, oh, you know, they got me doing these fluff pieces. And so I, you know, because I'm pretty. And this one, she's like, she's not a reporter. She's not even trying to report, now that I think about it. Or did she get fired?
Well, she does report at the very end. She does a report at the very end. But I think she doesn't, like, I don't know how she gets paid, because it doesn't seem like she's doing any work.
Yeah.
I mean, her character, April. Megan Fox is getting paid to stand there and look pretty.
She probably gets paid because she steals clothes from vendors in the subway.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of checked up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you can just do that?
She's
a better wig.
Yeah, she's one of the heroes in this movie, and she's stealing, you know.
Maybe she put it back.
Stealing clothes, and And one thing, thank God, this movie seemed less of a cell phone commercial.
Yeah, there was a lot less product placement, but there was still product placement.
Oh yeah, there still was, but it just I don't know, the first movie literally felt like, oh, let's see what I can do with this phone, and see what I can do with the phone. And then like, you know, then
the secret word trash behind the fridge. And all the pizza places in New York, and you don't get authentic New York pizza, you get freaking Pizza Hut. Come on.
Exactly.
Come on. And they had enough of that stuff to have like a couch made out of the boxes, which is, well, they live in a sewer. So
there was the Crush product placement and the Turtle Mobile, or what was the proper name for that, the Turtle Truck?
I don't know what they called that one. I like Tortunga Brothers. Whatever that was, like, it was a garbage truck, I guess. I don't know. But we can definitely get into spoiler territory here. So all I feel like I really need to say here is they definitely went the other direction. And one might argue they may have gone too far the other direction, but it's a good kids movie.
I enjoyed it.
That's okay. And if you loved the 80s cartoon, you're probably going to like this movie. Like, you might like it a whole lot. So
just someone like me.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So here we go. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. You've been warned. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Okay, what is there to spoil that we...
Spoilers! Oh, there's so much.
We'll be back with more dick and fart jokes.
This episode of Two Strangers, One Podcast is brought to you by Comics Etc. 1115 East Main and North Goodman at the Hungerford Building, door number 8. Find out more information at comicsetc.biz or like them on Facebook at facebook.com/comicsetc1.
Click and Hit, enhancing the experience for all recreational smokers. Click and Hit is a one-handed portable vaporizer. This smoking pipe has a compact four-stage design, complete with a built-in, windproof, butane refillable torch lighter. The large burn chamber holds your stash of legal herb or pipe tobacco. Click the button to ignite and inhale as usual. When you are done, put it back in your pocket for later. Smoke anytime with the touch of a button. No more carrying around grinders and tins. Pipe, rolling papers, and even your lighter at home. The Click and Hit cordless vaporizer is no bigger than a normal cigar, making it the world's smallest and most discreet vaporizer. It's perfect for use in small places or shared rooms. It's efficient, getting 5 to 8 draws from your packed chamber. It's affordable at just $19.95 each. Buy 3 and the shipping is free. Buy 4 and you get the 5th one free. Visit www.click-hit.com. That's clickandhit.com.
And now for listeners of Two Strangers, One Podcast, you can use promo code STRANGERS and receive 10% off your purchase at clickandhit.com. That's promo code STRANGERS for 10% off your purchase.
And we're back. Okay, so what to spoil about this movie?
Spoilers in a half shell. You've been warned.
Can I say that I liked Krang? I liked his suit. Why the fuck didn't they just keep him in the suit? I don't understand why they just couldn't do, like, I understand.
It obviously didn't fit well in there. that was pretty great. Push me in. Push me. Push. Like, it's like reverse birth. It was also kind of weird to be like hanged out of the suit.
Yeah, it's like there's all these tentacles holding him up.
You need to expose yourself in your like soft, fleshy parts.
Yeah, it's not, you know, he's not. And then even in the middle of the fight, he's hanging out on the shoulders of the robot. It just
shows how awesome he is because he doesn't even worry about getting attacked.
I said, he looked good. I like what they did with the exoskeleton or whatever you want to call it. You know, put him inside. That's the whole point of the character was this weird brain sucking out of the stomach of this hulking, ugly beast or whatever. Not, you know, and he's not in it. He's in.
It's like a big naked baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It also seemed to make that thing a little bit sentient, which is kind of amusing.
Yeah, calling it a dumb robot, and it kind of shoved him in there.
And then total fanboy moment there when he rearmed, and he had like the ball and chain. It was like, just like in the cartoon.
Mm-hmm. He's literally rearming.
Guys, this guy's literally rearming.
Okay, other thing that kind of pissed me off, when we mentioned earlier, the Casey Jones not wearing the mask. You know, and once again, I guess when you get a pretty boy like Stephen Amell, you kind of show the face. But even like later on, okay, you know, when they get into the building and he smashes up his car to get in the building, you know, and you know, somehow he magically makes rollerblades out of a desk chair or something, which that was really stupid. You know, I mean, why couldn't he just go back to the trunk of his car and pull out the mask? You know, like, you know, that would have been a cool action sequence with him fighting Bebop and Rocksteady, or at least trying to distract them or whatever the case may be, and have him, you know, put on the mask and find rollerblades in his car. With, you know, if he's a hockey guy, why wouldn't he have street, you know, people who play, you know, play street hockey have rollerblades, you know,
and obviously he's capable of using rollerblades. So
it's in the scene. They could have had him go over to the car, pop open the trunk, you know what I'm saying, maybe even looking at the car, seeing how smashed up it is and kind of wincing.
Did he actually find a hockey stick there? Because he found like a hockey stick looking thing, and I wasn't sure if it was a hockey stick or not.
Because what did they call it? Bebop called it something. Oh, that swizzle stick or something, you know, something. He called it some name or whatever. But he found something that, you know, was odd, if not a hockey stick, oddly similar to a hockey stick. And once again,
yeah, oddly shaped metal that looked like a hockey stick.
All of this stuff could have been found in his trunk, you know. Yeah. I got to tell you, you know, I was a correction officer with the state. And let me tell you, I got married, but I never had any kids. But what a nice car he drove for a guy that's a correction officer. You know, most of the guys I worked with, you know, drove Nissan Sentras and, you know.
It was believable until then.
Toyota Corollas, yeah. I mean, I could believe, right? I believe in 6-foot-tall, you know, Ninja Turtles, but I don't believe that a New York City correction officer can afford a whatever, you know, supercar that he had.
That's your New York bullshit radar.
And
speaking of scenes along those lines, did the Falcon really take down a trained ninja by getting the drop on him? What the shit? Also, how did Karai lose? Really? Karai? Oh, man, they really ruined Karai in this movie.
Now, didn't she die in the first one? I couldn't.
No.
She died. Or they got
really dispatched. She didn't die. She almost died. Like, the turtles attacked her, and it seemed like she was going to die, but she lived.
Okay. For some reason, I thought she was gone. I don't know why. I got to rewatch that first one, but or maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of pissed off that they didn't have a elevator scene in this one. You know,
oh, yeah, but like the whole movie was an elevator scene in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... You know,
the bros having a moment, camaraderie, there was a lot of that going on. But yeah, there wasn't like a particular moment where the turtles are like chilling.
Yeah, like you would think there's a scene where, like, you know, they're with the NYPD and they're charging the building and they're running towards like an elevator, or at least they're entering the lobby of the building. And I thought, wow, okay, here we'll get like a second elevator scene. A bit of a cute little callback, you know, or maybe even like, you know, they start like doing like music and then like, you know, something smashes through the building, you know, because they have
that to- would be great. That would have been great if they had done that. Like, they start getting into an elevator, it's like. You know, it's like, oh, well, I guess this is our stop. that would be good.
And inexplicably, once again, there's a lot of in a movie that's so outrageous, you know, they open this warp, trans-dimensional warp to get the Technodrome through. And they go through all the trouble of getting these three pieces, but it's not big enough to get the whole Technodrome through. The Technodrome still has to dismantle.
Gotta bring itself. It in pieces.
And it's not like those pieces are that big. I mean, of course, okay, with the small piece, okay, they could transport Shredder. So I guess the other two pieces are some sort of amplifier or whatever. But, you know, I mean, those pieces were big, but they weren't that big. I mean, it was like shipping containers. There was nothing. There was
I don't know. That was kind of a weird choice, but it was kind of cool to see the turtles fighting on a partially completed Technodrome.
Yeah.
There was a like, this thing's going to be up in 10 seconds. I was like, it doesn't look like it's going to be up in 10 seconds.
There's plenty of parts flying around. And then they get rid of it by...
Is there like only one room in the whole Technodrome? Because it looks like it's just... Inside of it's just a big room with a console.
Come in.
Oh, no. Actually, they did show... When Shredder... Shredder gets frozen and put in the trophy case. And I really want to scan that scene for Easter eggs, and I'm hoping that there's some in there.
Yeah, there has to be, like, neutrino.
But it went by so fast. They, I think they mentioned neutrino.
When they go into the Museum of Science,
yeah,
say, oh, it has neutrino, traces of neutrino atoms or something like that, so...
Hey, by the way, Shredder, maybe don't tell your giant warthog and rhino man to break things to find things. You gave them a freaking tank? Sorry, that was my bad. I got a little carried away.
I got this giant piece of alien technology. Just run into it, please.
Yeah, and like that whole scene when they're juggling the other one, I'm like, really, guys? Don't you both understand the importance of that thing? You should be a little bit more careful
with the totally extremely rare piece of alien technology popping up through, you know. And you know, I mean,
does take long to get a flight to Brazil, huh?
Yeah, and then to jump, you know, then to go from plane to plane.
Okay, how did Bebop and Rocksteady get on one flight, much less two?
Well, I was under the assumption that was like a personal jet, right? They rolled the tank onto the damn jet, because remember they shoot out the whole front. So I'm assuming it was.
Maybe it was. And oh boy, rough on those pilots.
Yeah, I guess it's...
This is the last time that I fly a giant rhino and warthog anywhere.
And their tank to Brazil.
Tank to Brazil. Okay, that's the episode title. This is the last time I fly a giant rhino and warthog and their tank to Brazil. I mean, that just sounds funny. Oh, bring back the mock. Good for you. I loved Bebop and Rocksteady in this movie. They
great. I think
they were
their own
so
movie.
Funny. So entertaining. My man! Hey, Biebs. Biebs. Never heard Rocksteady call Bebop Biebs before, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah, there was definitely chemistry there. I enjoyed it. You know.
It's just like, we're going to start up our own criminal enterprise. We're done being errand boys. Oh, hi there. Oh, what do you need? I need errand boys. Yeah, we're good with that.
Well, that's sort of like when Baxter Stockman said, I don't want to be a footnote. He goes, you'll be a footnote.
I don't want to be a footnote. Then you will be a fly. I really don't want to be a fly.
Yeah, then you got 6'4" freaking Tyler Perry struggling with two guys much smaller than him. Because U.S. Tyler Perry's legs are flopping all over the place. Because they're trying to make it believable that they
don't put me in there. The villains in this movie are really over the top. And like, oh my gosh. At the very end, they're crying, oh, be back. Like, no, you won't if this movie doesn't make enough money. But here's hoping, Krang.
I mean, they mentioned, you know, they mentioned the neutrinos. I was, once again, I had a feeling once they put Shredder in that jail cell, I was looking to see if I, there was nothing obvious, you know, there was no,
yeah,
I don't know what I was looking for, but I was looking for something. And, you know, I didn't, you know, no, alien.
It just looked like a bunch of frozen figures in there. All right, here's the big thing that I am so mad about. No rematch between the Turtles and Shredder. What? Come on. He's not a robot anymore. You could have had, like, Shredder should be able to fight the Turtles without, like, a ridiculous armor and still, you know, do well.
He's hold his own, yeah.
Yeah, but no, instead we have the Turtles fighting another robot. And that's, oddly, I think the action kind of took a step down in this movie in at least certain ways from the first one, because the Turtles, like, never use their weapons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, until they fight Krang, which is a big robot, so that's totally okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Once again, like
the first thing they're doing, they're like fighting the foot ninjas in their truck. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, nunchuck who's giganticus. Those are pretty great. Like, hey, those are pretty cool, right, Mikey? Yeah, they're. Somebody must have noticed that.
Yeah, big giant piece.
I really liked when Raphael was like, I'm bored. Boof! Anything else I can do for you?
You're not using me to my potential.
You're not being used to my potential. In the 2003 series, Raphael has a motorcycle that he flies out of the, like, van, truck, whatever, which would have been cool. I was kind of hoping he would, like, stick with the motorcycle after he jacked it, but eh, whatever. Ninja's the art of invisibility and all that.
Yeah.
Raphael's, like, the biggest one now, so he's kind of not... You know, whatever. Also, why can't you let Michelangelo chill out in the Halloween parade for a little longer? Nobody's gonna guess that it's not a costume. Except they'll be like, why are you like a turtle wearing human clothes? That's kind of weird.
You're a human dressed as a turtle trying to dress like a human.
You know, why, that's why do you have... That's
a freaking concept. It's my original character. Oh, okay.
My original cosplay.
Yeah, exactly. Not enough Splinter in this movie. Not nearly enough Splinter. Because he looks better, and you got a little bit more of the time. How would they trick Casey to go fight him? That was great. Casey's boring in this movie, unfortunately. Like, this is the most boring Casey Jones. The 2012 cartoon has a teenage Casey Jones that is obnoxious. This one's just boring.
Yeah, I think
never gonna match Elias Cortez in the 1990 movie, who was just, he was kind of an asshole, and it was great.
I mean, they had a perfect opportunity of, okay, he's a correction officer, he loses his job. You know, they should have, you know, instead of like suspending him, straight up firing him. And that's like the straw that breaks the camel's back that makes him into a vigilante. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, but not in this case. In all other iterations of Casey Jones, one day a guy's like, I'm sick of all this crime. I'm going to beat up criminals because I'm a little unhinged. Yeah.
And
this guy, he was a correction officer, probably just to like get him involved, which is kind of stupid, but yeah. It got us from point A to point B. I think he could be better in a potential sequel, mm-hmm. as he sort of falls into the role.
There's a lot of promise. That's the sad thing is that they could, with this sort of being a, as you said, like a reboot or soft reboot. You know, there's so much promise for the next movie. I mean, you can have a Baxter Stockman. You could bring Splinter back. You have Splinter, you know, and Krang and Neutrinos.
You just
and...
mixed up Splinter and Shredder again.
Did I say Splinter and Shredder? I'm sorry. I keep saying Splinter and Shredder. You know what I mean. Splinter and Shredder Shredder and Krang could have been, you know.
Yeah, where was the banter between Shredder and Krang? It was just like, you will do this for me. All right, okay. But I have a problem. That's the other thing. Shredder wasn't out for revenge in this. He didn't seem like he was really out for revenge. It was more like, all right, I'm out of jail. So this alien guy wants to take over the world, and why not? He gave me this stuff and said it'll help us build an army. Let's try it out on these two thugs, because we don't know what the fuck's going to happen. I thought, well... I feel like they cheated with the purple ooze. I feel like they really cheated because in all other iterations of Ninja Turtles, there had to be like a catalyst for the mutation. Mm-hmm. It had to be around another animal or, you know, some kind of nonsense. So it seems like they just wanted to, how do I put this? Like, just speed up the process, really.
It's
like, we don't got any animals around here.
Yeah.
So it returned them to their ancestral animal. It's like, oh, dang, Baxter, I guess yours is a fly. Bummer for you, man.
Yeah, it would have been like, yeah, had they said, you know, oh, I happen to have this DNA here or something to that effect.
He totally could have done that. I feel like maybe there even was a scene about that because mm-hmm. I fully expected that to be like the case. But whatever. It's like, MacGuffin juice.
Yeah, I guess I steal liberally from other podcasts. Once again, from the Weekly Planet podcast, they had said they could have mentioned like, oh, I have, you know, this leather jacket I'm wearing or this leather vest that I'm wearing is made out of real warthog or, you know, something to that effect, you know. Oh, and I have these rhino skin boots. So like, you know, at least something so when it activates
the DNA.
Some
bit of DNA would have been in there. Yeah, because it's always a combination DNA thing. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing that honestly kind of pisses me off about this movie. In the 80s cartoon, Hamato Yoshi turns into Splinter, and part of his story arc is that he would like to be human again, and they try to help him on a few occasions. They never succeed, at least long term, and there's even an episode where Baxter the Fly mutates a whole bunch of people, and then they find a way to fix that. And then they, like, destroy the retro mutagen gun. I was like, you assholes! What about Splinter? Did you forget about your father figure? He kind of would like to be human again, because you've always been turtles, so, you know, whatever. And that was the other thing. They're such dicks, because Baxter Stockman made that thing, and he wanted to turn himself human again. And the turtles are like, nah. We're not going to help you. You've been mean to us. Even though Baxter Stockman in the cartoon is more or less a victim. I mean, he does some bad things of his own volition, but yeah, it's like, you dicks, why would you do that? Help a brother out. So in this version, when the turtles are like, we could be human, I was like, oh, come, where was this shit when Splinter wanted to be human? Even in the new cartoon, they have a couple of characters that they're trying to demutate. They actually managed to retro mutagen and turn somebody back to human twice. And like they used it as like a wipe the slate clean at the end of a story arc at one point, where they got all of New York City, like a whole bunch of people in New York City, got mutated into these sort of Krang type things, because in that show the Krang is a race with an extra A. The Krang. Okay. And they used retro mutagen, and they saved all those people and made them perfectly normal again. And since then, they've like tried to demutate some other characters. And there was always like, well, Splinter sure would like to be human again someday. But now Splinter's kind of like, eh, whatever. But in this one, Splinter was always a rat, and the turtles were always turtles. So this is all like Disney princess bullshit. Part of your world. Michelangelo wants to be part of your world, bro. But it does give them something to argue about.
And apparently you just got to just touch it on your hand and it'll just split your fingers open. You think splitting fingers would be a lot more traumatic.
You would think that there would be some pain involved. Like Bebop and Rocksteady didn't seem like they were in pain either, which seems kind of odd. There was like, whoa, this is kind of weird. Actually, I'm kind of glad that that wasn't disturbing when they mutated, because I was kind of concerned that it would be. So I get a little wigged out by some of that stuff. Like, there were episodes of the 80s Ninja Turtles that were uncomfortable for me to watch, because I never liked the idea of, like, human mutation. So certainly a lot of things in X-Men wigged me out. But yeah, it wasn't too bad in this movie. The mutation scene was actually really interestingly animated, which, pretty cool.
And at least, like, you know, they were guys, you know, with their characters, they liked weird shit, you know what I'm saying? So for them being turned into things, like,
they were surprisingly okay with it. I was like, hey, dude, I'm a rhino. What are you? I don't know. Oh, I'm a little piggy. You're a warthog. They call me Mr. Uh-oh, Disney's on your door. So Bebop and Rocksteady were great. But Casey was meh. April was kind of non-existent after she like cracked the case with Baxter Stockman. And it's really kind of, I don't know, plot convenience how Shredder gets introduced to Krang. It's like, well, you found my transportation rock, and I can like redirect that to bring you to me, so let's do business. Okay.
But I can send you back.
Would have liked a little bit. It's like, oh, I know all about you, Shredder. It's like, you do? What? I need an adult? This a tentacle monster just told me that he knows all about me. I've seen enough hentai to know where this is going. So my friend just saw this. He really liked it. And he liked that Krang had all that nasty tentacle slime. I was like, well, I wonder what you do on a Saturday night.
They could have done more with that. They could have had him when he was fighting the turtles, like at least one scene where he kind of gets some of his slime on Michelangelo, and Michelangelo just like,
he kind of got close, but I guess they never really committed.
Yeah.
He's all like, don't, dude.
Yeah, just to see Mike. I mean, because Michelangelo's probably the most funny characters to do that with, where he just gets freaked out, you know.
It's like, oh, nasty.
Yeah, he's like just wiping it off, and it's not really coming off, or so, you know, that, you know.
Oh, dude, it's not coming off. Oh, it stained my pants. That's why you shouldn't be wearing pants. On that note, yay, Michelangelo's not a rapist anymore.
Yeah, a creepy rapist.
Yeah, it was. I was not into creeper Michelangelo in the other movie because it just seems so wrong. It's like you were like her childhood pet. So that's kind of messed up, dude. We don't need to. Oh, have you heard about the Ninja Turtles porn parody that was recently made?
Yes. I
10-inch Mutant Ninja Turtles with such great names as Donatello and Master Sphincter.
Yes, and I was gonna link the. I was gonna link it to Paul's page, but. I think at the time I was sort of in a hurry. And then of course, you know, curiosity gets the better of me. And I went on, like on PornMD or whatever. And there, what it was is you could see like the thumbnail and then you click on it. And then it said, you know, removed by the proper owners due to copyright or whatever. So it was.
Oh, Viacom took that down?
Well, no, not Viacom. I think it was like on the free sites, like PornMD or whatever. Oh, okay. And so if you want to see it, you have to go to the original people.
Yeah, it's like free on their website, isn't it? I think it's free.
Oh, is it? Oh.
I think it is.
Okay.
I haven't looked into it really.
But to think that someone with animatronics is also in porn. Sort of. It's very.
I mean, they're fairly basic costumes from what I can see from the pictures.
Yeah, but their mouths and I think their mouths and eyes move.
Which... Oh boy, here comes the Five Nights at Freddy's porn parody. Worst trip to Chuck E. Cheese ever.
Chewbacca mom porn parody.
Nope. lots of good interacting with the turtles in this. They're very entertaining. They did a good job with the turtles. They don't have Johnny Knoxville as Leonardo anymore. It was the guy who was in this, I was going to say in the suit, but the motion capture actor, Pete something, he was Leonardo in this. So good for him, because he got a lot more lines than Johnny Knoxville did in the other movie. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think I don't know any of the guys from this movie. Like, I saw the credits, and I'm like, these guys are, you know.
They're just actors.
Yeah, which I guess
I think is good, because if you used famous actors as the Turtles, that would be, it wouldn't feel right. I honestly didn't think Johnny Knoxville did bad as Leonardo in the other one. I barely even thought of him as Johnny Knoxville, so there's that. But the other guy was just as good or better. So props to that.
But it wasn't in the 2007 movie. Wasn't like the kid from like American Pie.
Actually, the
Jason Biggs was Disney.
Jason Biggs was Leonardo in the 2012 cartoon until the third season. In the third season, well, he kind of fell off in the second season. Is probably conflict with work. Mm-hmm. He had other gigs like Orange is the New Black. He was on that. And Seth Green took over as Leonardo. He's been voicing him since. Oh. So that was kind of an interesting combination of typical voice actors and people who were better known for film, mm-hmm. like Raphael was Sean Astin, the Rudy.
Rudy. I was going to say Samuel, Rudy. Samwise. But
Samwise, Gamgee, Rudy, Goonies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was Raphael, Jason Biggs was Leonardo, as they were kind of more film actors. Though Sean Astin has since, he wanted to do cartoons, so he's been doing a lot more cartoons now. And the other two guys, Greg Sipes and Rob Paulsen, are both accomplished voice actors. So it was kind of splitting the difference with that cast. It was interesting. And Rob Paulsen, of course, was Raphael in the 80s cartoon, and he took over for Donatello in this one, and he's fantastic. He's always fantastic. So that works. And Greg Sipes is such a surfer dude in general, so he's just perfect for Michelangelo. A really great cast in that show. Wouldn't have minded if they, carried over some of those voices, but in the 2007 CGI movie, it was also voice actor types. Nolan North was Raphael. Mm-hmm. He's Nathan Drake.
Nathan Drake, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of other video game characters. And, oh gosh, what is his name? What is his name? Oh, he's so many cartoons. Leonardo was voiced by James Arnold Taylor, and he's in a lot of cartoons. Mm-hmm. So him and Michelangelo was voiced by a guy named Mikey, which is kind of funny. Mikey Kelly. He's done some cartoons, and Mitchell Whitfield, I think I pronounced that right. It was either Whitfield or Whitfield, was Donatello. They both did really well as Mike and Don, doing kind of the typical Mike and Don voices. Kind of amusing thing is Kevin Michael Richardson played a Stone General character, and now he's Shredder, and they sound pretty much the same. But in that movie, they also stunt casted Casey, April, and the main antagonist. The main antagonist was played by Patrick Stewart, which I guess that's kind of stunt casting. Patrick Stewart's, you know, I mostly hear him on American Dad these days. they had him, and actually Chris Evans was Casey Jones. Wow. Before he was Captain America, but after he was Johnny Storm. Kind of fits more into the Johnny Storm level of Chris Evans. Like, Chris Evans is so huge now, so in more ways than one. That dude is ripped now. But yeah, so he played that role back in 2007, and April was Sarah Michelle Gellar. And she did fine.
I'm surprised they didn't get, like, what's his face? Freddie Prinze Jr. to be a voice. If Sarah Michelle Gellar is a voice, I'm surprised she didn't get her husband to.
I'm a little surprised, too, because in the most recent Star Wars cartoon, Star Wars Rebels, Freddie Prinze Jr. is in that, and they do live action Fred and Daphne.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says, that was good casting. And Matthew Lillard as Shaggy was also fantastic. Yo, kind of think it. Linda Cardellini was awesome as Velma.
Yeah.
It was a hot Velma.
Yeah. Not so chubby.
like, Linda Cardellini is smoking, though. And she was especially back then.
So I also just wanted to mention that, why would a guy giving cell phones to underworld figures keep track of cell phones?
Yeah, that seems to invite nothing but trouble.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're an underground guy, I think you'd sell me the cell phone that can't be tracked. You know.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I just happen to have this GPS right here that has the tracking information for the two cell phones I just gave out.
You're telling me that this Rhino and Warthog Man didn't accidentally crush those cell phones at some point? That seems a little unlikely.
That would have been a funny scene where they smash it. Like, Casey Jones is on his way to figure, you know, where they're at. And then, like, hey, what's this? Oh, I forgot. Oh, I broke it.
Like, oh, I got to turn this thing off. Oh. Oops.
And Casey loses the signal.
Yeah. Okay, here's another beef I had. Leonardo was all like, we're not working as a team. We're not working as a team. You're not listening to me. I don't see any evidence of that. In the he like goes off on that tangent when they are coming back from Brazil. It's like, we were totally out of sync. It's like, everybody seemed to be doing like the best they could, man. I mean, they could have maybe coordinated efforts a bit more, but it's not like you were calling out, you know, suggestions.
Yeah.
Like, you don't blame them because you're not saying anything. Sheesh, man. What's wrong with you? Yeah. His brothers had every right to be mad about him hiding the fact that they could be human.
Yeah, that was, I think that was, that, okay, there was two scenes, that one certainly made sense, you know, and they kind of like, oh, what about Mikey? Oh, Mikey is more heart than brain or something like that. And it's like, that's, to me, that's a bit of an insult, you know?
Yeah, like it's not like unusual for Leonardo to say that kind of thing, but yes.
You know, he's too stupid to make the decision for himself, and it's so selfish, you know? Like,
it's
always going to be turtles. How about giving your brother a chance? How about saying, look, you know, I would like this to stay turtle.
He shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't force his expectations on the rest of them, because, you know, what they do now is kind of crappy. I mean, they protect the city from the shadows. You know, they don't need thanks or anything, but they protect the city from the shadows. They can't, quote, live normally. They can't do what most humans can do, which is, you know, it'd be a bummer for another sentient creature to not be able to, you know, interact with other sentient creatures. Like, they would probably get bored. I don't know. They got stuff, but you know, you need a little interaction every now and then. And you know, April, as attractive as she is, probably isn't enough.
Yeah, not for Turtle Man.
Yeah, exactly. And so when they're all like, "I'll do whatever you guys want," Raphael just chucks that at the wall. There's probably a safer way of disposing of that.
Instead of just like throwing that against the wall.
That could occasionally, that could probably cause some problems. Just pointing that out there, Raphael.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, they're like, "Well, are you sure? You don't give people enough credit. You probably accept you now if you would show yourself to the rest of the world." It's like, what, and live a normal life? It's like, well, that was kind of what you've been pining for the entirety of this movie, but okay, you know, great, you got over it. Later, I was like, isn't it all about inner acceptance? It's like, oh, don't give me that bullshit. I want to catch a Knicks game somewhere other than above it. Yeah, that all seemed kind of, whatever. And the police chief is like, "Put your hands up." It's like, we're not monsters. Oh, they're monsters.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Really? Just like got broken into by a bunch of ninjas and they stole something and you're detaining the weirdos that seem to be helping?
Yeah. I do have to say that you kind of read my mind on that scene also, that where when he goes, "They're monsters," and then Michelangelo looks so dejected. It's like, "We're not monsters." That was like that kind of one, like that, and you know, deceiving the brothers, and that scene where they're like, not that this movie's known for its emotional, you know, beats, but though, you know, when it's like, "We're not monsters," it's sort of, I felt really bad.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that this movie had that the other one did not. Heart. That's the thing. It's a different director this time, and it seems like the director definitely cared about the source material. Mm-hmm. The writers were the same, and it's kind of amazing that they did as well as they did, considering it was the same writers. Would also explain why there's so many issues here and there. But there were interviews with the suit actors, the motion capture actors, mm-hmm. and some other people that were talking about the process of making the first movie. And they said when they were making that first movie, they weren't really sure what kind of movie they were even making. They couldn't determine if it was going to be a family-friendly movie or not. Mm-hmm. And there just seemed to be not clear direction from the director or the writers. And it was kind of a big mess. And it was like, well, yeah, the results speak for themselves. But this time, the director cared about the source material, apparently mostly about the 80s cartoon, which, as far as a lot of people are, that is Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. Comics? What are those? 2003 cartoon? Never heard of it. 2012 cartoon? Ah, it's for babies. That is verbatim what the casual audience says about all versions of Ninja Turtles that aren't the 80s cartoon. Oh, and the 1990 movie was the best. And that is the one I can agree with.
I just looked it up. The director is Dave Green, and he did that movie Earth to Echo.
Earth to Echo, and that was like his only other movie.
Yeah, everything else he's done was sort of like independent shorts and stuff like that. But
But the other guy, he had done other action movies, mm-hmm. which was apparent in the action scenes. They may have sort of dialed it down on the action in some respects on this one, which is kind of disappointing, but. It's certainly a way more entertaining movie, and it doesn't have a stick up its butt.
Yeah, the director of Part One did Wrath of the Titans, the much acclaimed sequel to Clash of the Titans, the remake.
Much acclaimed.
I did the sequel to a reboot, the unwanted Battle Los Angeles.
That was stupid.
Yeah, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Beginning. So.
Yeah. And of course, produced by Michael Bay.
Yeah, absolutely. And Darkness Falls. Was that a good movie? I don't know.
Eh.
No. Okay, well, let me see. A vengeful spirit has taken the form of the Tooth Fairy to extract vengeance on a town that lynched her 150
wow.
years earlier. Okay.
I don't even know what to say about that one. So we yeah, see definitely a better director this time than it shows.
And hopefully he'll get, you know, I mean, of course, you know, the people, they move on to other things. But, you know, I like what they've done with it. And I hope they make a sequel, even though all signs are probably pointing to negative.
I wouldn't go so far as saying that they definitely won't make a sequel. Because even if this movie doesn't do super great, there's merchandising.
Yeah.
Those toys are going to sell.
And as of this afternoon on Rotten Tomatoes, 22% for critics, 51% for audience.
So, interesting. Yeah. See, this is where I think, and this is kind of something that I've noticed with other reviews that I've read for the movie. People who generally liked the first one tend to not like this one. Mm-hmm. But you seem to be the opposite case of that.
I like them both. I mean, the first one I felt was innocuous at best. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible. I mean, of course, I hated the new look and I hated all the extra shit. But, you know, and I hated that it felt like a fucking cell phone commercial. But I was like, all right, you know, I'll take it for what it is, you know. And, you know, and then, you know, and it's actually gotten better. And this one, I had fun. I love that about summer movies. I just want a movie that makes me have fun.
Yeah. You know, to this day, I bought multiple copies of all the other Ninja Turtles movies. I did not buy the 2014 movie. I probably will never buy the 2014 movie. I might buy this one.
Yeah.
And that is my seal of approval, I guess. Right.
If I'm going to spend a couple bucks on a DVD, not a couple bucks, but, you know, it kills me.
Like 20 bucks.
Yeah, I remember growing my DVD collection. I go to, like, fucking Walmart and I see, you know, the $5 bin or something or like, you know, or like the four movies.
Where you can find all the other Ninja Turtles movies.
Exactly. I think, like, they literally have for, like, 12 bucks the first four, you know.
I have so many copies.
So I think we should wrap it up unless you have any other points you want to make. I can't think of anything.
Think if there was anything else. I thought it was kind of stupid that April kind of strong-armed Casey into going with the Turtles. She's like, come on, man. The Turtles. Hang out with them. I mean, I felt like Casey was just bland.
Yeah.
Casey. I bet you that before. And he was really talkative.
Yeah. No Jose Canseco bats.
Yeah. Tell me you didn't pay money for this.
It was a 2-for-1 sale. But I just...
The 2-for-1 sale. Cricket. You gotta know what a crumpet is to understand. Cricket.
See, you know, here we are quoting that movie, 27 years later?
Wise men say forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza. I wish they had done like a callback to that one. It seemed like their pizza guy was fully understood, like the deal with their pizza guy before. But I would have loved them to like show the first time that they got a pizza that way, because it could have been a nice throwback to that scene. And, $5 off. You're 2 minutes late, dude. Oh, come on. I couldn't find the place. I believe that the pizza guy was played by Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Ninja Turtles. I think I saw that in the credits. And let's talk about the credits. Oh, man. That remix of the 80s cartoon theme was the bomb.
Yes, absolutely.
Finally, I've been going to see Transformers. I've been going to see other movies with like iconic theme songs, and this finally somebody got it right. You take the old theme song and you modernize it and you put it in the movie. Finally. Well, I mean, technically it's a credits scene, but
yeah,
who cares?
It shows so much love and respect that, you know, that they would, okay, here's what you wanted to see. And once again, I mean, maybe, you know, for the people, for totally disregarding all the other iterations other than just like the 89 one, you know, it's, I don't know, it made it, I liked it. I liked the fact that, you know, that they actually did a remake or a remix or whatever the case may be. I forgot how good, you know what it was? I was like, and it's a stupid thing to say, but I forgot how good the song was. Like, I mean, yeah, it was updated, but like, I was like song. Kind of like singing along, and like, I caught myself singing along to it, and I didn't think I would.
I wish they had done the thing when they're like, where the, like, the character calls back. They didn't do that, with the, like, he's a radical rat.
Oh, yeah. Give me a break, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, I've been conditioned by Marvel movies to actually sit and wait to see if there was a
post-credit scene. I did too. I was like, of course.
I think
nowadays, when I went to see Batman v Superman, I was sitting watching the credits, and one of the theater staff was like, there's no after-credit scene. This isn't a Marvel movie. All right, thanks. Good to know. I don't quite trust you, so I'm going to sit to the end. He was right. I should have trusted him.
You just want to get inside, you can start sweeping up this popcorn.
Yeah. So the best part of the credits is the start of the credit sequence with bright colors, cool drawings, and a really cool remix of the Ninja Turtles theme song with a little hint of ninja rap in it.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit. They do a call. They do a shout out to Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. And he's actually, you know, when once again, just sitting through the credits, you know, they actually have like that song, the ninja rap, Go Ninja Go, is actually like technically in the credits for you know, when the movies, whenever they credit, you know, the songs.
Yeah, I think that's because that remix uses both of them, which is kind of an interesting way to credit it, actually. Because they only credit the original composers of the Ninja Turtles theme song from the cartoon, which was done by Chuck Lorre.
Chuck Lorre, yeah.
Big Bang Theory.
And, you know, he gets, like, a check.
For many years, that song was not used. And then when Viacom bought Ninja Turtles, they brought it back, baby! Which was an excellent choice. So, yeah, if you like Ninja Turtles, particularly the 80s cartoon, you're probably going to like this movie.
And I think if you sat through this podcast, if you're sitting through this podcast, you've probably seen it already. Or you've probably already seen it. Or if you haven't, you probably will enjoy it. If you sat through us talking about it for so long. Would you like to go through how listeners can get to follow you on social media and other outlets?
Sure. My Twitter is @sketch1984. My Tumblr is sketch1984.tumblr.com. You can ask me questions on ask.fm/sketch1984. If you want to listen to my podcast, you can find it at podcast.tunamifaithful.com or soundcloud.com/Toonami Faithful Podcast, or, you know, look it up on iTunes, Stitcher, what have you. And we put out an episode every week, pretty much without fail. I mean, we failed on occasion.
Sleep or no sleep, you'll put out, so damn it.
I am currently delaying editing a podcast right now.
Sorry.
It's not your fault. My fault. Oh,
and then also, like I mentioned last episode, me and Matt got our press passes for New York Comic Con, so that's going to be
nice.
pretty interesting. You know, every year has been, like, it's gotten better both years, and now I can only imagine what this year is going to be. I mean, I don't want to jinx it, because probably this year probably suck, but no, it's been pretty good, and I look forward. I mean,
well, things have definitely gone uphill for you every year that you've gone, so now I'm thinking you'll go to this, and then Adult Swim will be like, hey, you want a show? You can make a show.
We bring
here's some money.
XLR, and I'm playing Coop. The live action Megas XLR.
No, but true story. If they ever did a live action Megas XLR, they should totally get that guy who was the best friend on Reaper.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember that Reaper? So, that guy is perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect for Coop. Actually, he's voicing Hunk, the Coop-like character in the new Voltron series, which, by the way, people should check out that Voltron series. Should be probably out by the time this podcast is out. It's supposed to go up on June 10th. All the episodes of the first season on Netflix, and it's from people that worked on The Legend of Korra, and it definitely shows in the animation and the designs. And it's Voltron, so giant robots, bitches.
And with the, because in the show Reaper, I believe like his full name was like Sokolowski or something like that, but
his
nickname
like that.
Was Sock.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, which I, you know, anyone named Sock, I instantly think of like fapping and, you know, letting him out in a sock. But
he probably did a lot of that. And I think there was some point when he had a girlfriend in that show.
I'm just saying, is I think because first his friend's name, I think first they just referred to him as Sock, and I'm like, when I think of Sock, I think of instantly my mind goes to horrible, dirty places. But then, like, I think later on they're like, oh, well, Sock is short for Sokolowski or whatever, or like a, you know, some adult, some authoritarian character called him Mr. Sokolowski or whatever. So like that's where Sock came from. But coincidentally, in Megas XLR, Coop, his real name is like Koopalowski. So
interesting
coincidence. I think not. Nah.
I don't know. He definitely seems like a Coop to me.
Yeah. Oh, he would be. Yeah, absolutely. So
if okay. only there was a half CGI Megas XLR movie.
Oh, sweet Jesus! I said if I won the Powerball, I would buy back the rights. Like when they had the, you know, the whatever. $100 million they had like last year.
Can we sneak Megas into the next Pacific Rim?
Oh, just put him on a screen in the back. Sort of like a
reboot. So, yes. I think Jody and George have said something to the effect of they could probably get away with making a show called Gigas MLX or something. Can make essentially the same show. They just can't do Megas. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking. I love that show. And if you love that show, I think you can still get it on iTunes. And you should, even though buying it probably won't do anything. Except for entertain you, because there's no other legal way to own it.
Yeah, like I have the episodes, you know, the ones that I've acquired as files. I put them, I uploaded them, if you want to, or I put them on the hard drive for my PlayStation 3. And so like sometimes, so what I'll do is on occasion, if I'm ever feeling down, I just put on a Megas XLR episode. It just cheers me up. It's such a weird kind of a, you know.
I went to the DMV the other day right as it was opening, mm-hmm. and there was a line. I was like, there is some kind of joke about there always being a line at the DMV here. And then I pulled up that GIF of Coop smashing the DMV with Megas. I was like, standing in line at the DMV. It was actually fairly efficient, all things considered, but like seriously, a line even when they're not open, that is just that's the DMV.
So we'd like to tell people that if you want to find out more about this show, I don't know how we came across it, but you can visit twostrangersonpodcast.net. That's all spelled out, twostrangersonpodcast.net, where you can find links for everything show-related. You can find links to our iTunes page, which I don't know who uses iTunes anymore. Does anyone even have an iPhone? Well, I guess iPhones, yes, but no one has an iPad or an iPod. Or no one has an iPod anymore. I was in the thrift shop the other day. Not the thrift shop,
Yeah, they can't even give those things away anymore. There was some kind of radio announcement. It was like, if you call now, we'll send in a free iPod Touch. It's like, so you can't even give those things away anymore, huh?
I had the 160 gig, and it was stolen from me, but I was, you know.
It's a decent amount of space for music.
Yeah, I had 17,000 songs on it, you know.
I have some shows on legally. iTunes, so that would be useful because I don't have that much space on my phone.
Yeah. The 17,000 songs was I totally downloaded legally and purchased from my gigantic CD collection. No, but it was so weird. But if you still have an iPod and you listen to podcasts through your iPod, which is it's so weird that nowadays that's probably not how anybody listens to podcasts anymore. But if you do, if you have an iPhone, iPad, or iPod, you can find the links to our iTunes page, or you could just go on iTunes and search for Two Strangers on Podcast. If you have an Android device and you listen to podcasts, we are on the Stitcher app. That's STITCHER, the Stitcher app, which actually this past week Stitcher got bought out by another company. And as of right now, they're not doing anything to, they're not changing Stitcher, but they're making things a little easier to find podcasts. I know they kind of promised that. And so I'm super excited. And so, you know, I'm curious on where they're going from there. Like I said, Stitcher was bought out by another company, but they basically said, you know, don't worry, nothing's changed for the most part. So if you don't have an iPhone, iPad, or iPod, you can find us on a Stitcher app where, you know, I listen, you know, Kevin Smith's, you know, Smodcast, Chris Hardwick's The Nerdist, and of course, Sketches Baby, the Toonami Faithful podcast, all available on Stitcher. You can write to us at twostrangersonepodcast@gmail.com. Once again, all spelled out, twostrangersonepodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for older episodes of Two Strangers on Podcast and you can't find it, you will find them on iTunes, any of the pages, because, you know, we've run out of space on the server. So I've uploaded all the old episodes to YouTube. So you can, just go on YouTube and search for Two Strangers on Podcast. And we're on Twitter at Stranger Podcast, even though, unfortunately, I'm not as active on Twitter as I want to be. And of course, everyone and their mother is on Facebook. So you can follow us on Facebook, and it certainly helps if you want to like this episode, share this episode, like our page, share the page, any way you can, that to get the word out. I greatly appreciate it. Just go to facebook.com/twostrangersonepodcast. That's about it. I can't think of anything else. I'm trying to think. Super fan Oscar wrote back into the show. He said, because in the last episode, I bitched about these two girls deleting their OkCupid account. He goes, those girls deleted their accounts because of you. Looking at that beard, anybody would run and hide. They probably joined the witness protection program. The fact that you've ever seen a pussy is amazing.
Classic Oscar.
And he goes, I have an idea. How about going to a blind school or institution? And then again, they'd feel your erroneous head and feel that awful beard. Oh, the love is back. Good to hear from you, Oscar. So with that,
wish I had hecklers that were that creative.
So with that, we certainly hope you guys enjoyed listening and had as much fun as we did recording. Thank you for listening to Strangers on Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Sketch.
Don't be a stranger. Peace. We're out. Bye.
All right, here we go, man. Go ahead. You want to read
Double it? Jackpot.
What is it?
It is a self-published book by Christopher Colon.
Chris Colon? Smells good to me. But... Look at her. That broke that fucking cold little exterior. He's like, hee.
But it is spelled C-O-L-O-N.
Him punny.
But... Double Jackpot is a book about a comic book artist, Eric, who is in a loveless relationship with a materialistic
I feel you, Eric.
Lynette.
Are you sure I didn't write this? I sounds hauntingly familiar.
He starts cheating on his girlfriend with a more creatively supportive woman, Nadia.
Well, I gotta meet her. Where's the Nadia?
There's your summer girlfriend.
Summer Nadia! Is Nadia.
Nadia?
Yeah, I think Nadia is spelled with an A.
Alright.
Both Lynette and Nadia play the double jackpot, the largest payout in lotto history, much like the recent Powerball. Both girls play his birth date as the winning numbers. Eric is now stuck between two of the country's richest women. Who will he choose? It's not that simple. This is a clever fucking idea,
yeah,
man.
Is.
Look at her. Fucking, she's impressed.
I am.
Summer. She got some summer reading. Christopher Colon smells real lovely with an original idea. This is. I've never heard this before.
I haven't either. This is a self-published book, much in the indie spirit as Kev's Clerks.
Oh, you don't even need to name check me. This is just a good idea. You could stand on your own, man. You don't even have to be like, hey, remember Clerks? This is nothing like that. This is way more original than Clerks. This is a good idea, man. Why didn't I think of this?
I need something to read. This book is part of the Comic Books, Heavy Metal, Video Games Trilogy Book 2. Odd I See, A Tale from the Road, coming soon.
Right on, man. It's part of a trilogy. This is the first part.
Way to write, man.
He's seeking a literary agent. Motherfuckers, anybody out there? There ain't no literary agents listening to this show, I assure you, sure. Sure, I assure you, sure. But somebody know a literary agent? Hook a motherfucker up! Chris Colon come up with an original idea. I should tell Raskin, that's a good fucking idea, to be honest
too.
With you. That's a fucking rom-com right there. Megan, get Raskin on the phone. Isn't it possible to get Raskin on the phone? No?
Yeah.
I want to run it past him, man. I want to, and if it happens, I get a taste, Chris Colon. I get a whiff, if you will.
The book could also be ordered on www.com. LULU.com.
That's Lulu.com.
I understand that. I just want to spell it out.
Normally one says it, that spells it. Still, Lulu.com. What is that? Do you know what it is?
I don't know. All right. The book could also be ordered on www.lulu.com. Search for Double Jackpot Christopher Cologne. A paperback version of the book is $15, and a PDF file is only $5.
$5 is insanely inexpensive. $15 is not even that bad for hard, for a paperback version.
No.
This is a million-dollar idea right here. Like a fucking a movie about a dude who fucking is stuck between two chicks, both of who play his birthday and win the lottery. Come on!
I
can see that trailer. Chris Cologne is on to something. Nobody else can smell it but me.
I'll read it.
Thank you. I'm going to make that smelly joke.
I know. You're trying to get me to laugh again.
It worked once. Double Jackpot is a self-published book by Chris Cologne, man. It's the first book in his comic books, heavy metal, video games trilogy. Book 2, Odd I See, A Tale from the Road, should be coming out soon. Get all the information at Chris Cologne, like a motherfucker.
I will totally read this.
Double Jackpot. I'm serious. I'm going to recommend that to fucking Raskin. How is that not a movie? You know what I'm saying? This could be a sexy movie. You could do an R-rated version. There could be nudie in it, and you could sell them fucking both chicks. Maybe a little penetration. Maybe a butthole shot. No butthole, no care.
I would like to formally apologize to Christopher Cologne.
Sex sells. Chris Cologne will appreciate that. He's like, thanks for throwing a few buttholes in there, man.
Don't forget to check out twostrangersonepodcast.net, your one-stop resource for everything show-related. You can find links to subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher. You could also find links to buy my book, Double Jackpot, on twostrangersonepodcast.net.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.